I'm Grady Booch, and this is my column on architecture. The soul of a new Watson. If a fact rises in the world and you can't Google it, is it real? If you consider that question, or its traditional arbitratorial form, through the lens of the Googleplex, you'd likely answer no. If you consider that question from a less ethereal perspective, you'd probably answer yes. Context, meaning, and relevance matter, and depending upon which context, meaning, relevance triplet you choose, you might collect different sets of evidence, each with particular levels of confidence as to their veracity. Watson, IBM's reasoning system, works pretty much that way. Given a clue, Watson generates hypotheses through forward chaining, collects evidence through backward chaining, and then presents its results with scored levels of confidence. Nothing is particularly unique about that processing pipeline. It's a dominant architectural style that has been proven to work in a number of textual retrieval systems. What is highly unique about Watson are the architectural decisions that permit it to process natural language across structured and unstructured data using deep analytic algorithms that the system learns to combine in optimal ways. This is not an article about Watson's architecture. However, there will be a time and a place for opening the curtain more fully on how Watson works, but this is not yet the time or the place. Rather, I want to offer a case study on how one pulls back such a curtain. While Watson and its developers are the hero of the story, the subject of this story is far more meta. One of my all-time favorite nonfiction books, embraced by the general public despite its technical bent, is Tracy Kidder's The Soul of a New Machine. If you've ever been part of a startup, if you've ever lost yourself in the passion and grit of developing a wickedly cool system, if you've ever had the distinct misfortune to be on a software death march, you will resonate with Kidder's story. The hero of his story is not the machine, of course. Rather, its heroes are Eagle's developers. What is so engaging about the book are the human stories of these heroes. For example, Kidder mentions the resignation note from one of the engineers who burned out working on microcode, in which the developer wrote, "I'm going to a commune in Vermont and will deal with no unit of time less than a season." The point is that, in all of these cases, we have a deeply technical product that was produced by a social process, and while the product, in this case of Eagle, or the software, in this case of Watson, is an instance of a system's architecture, it is not a description of the system's architecture itself. A team of around 25 people, led by IBM fellow David Ferrucci, built Watson over a period of 4 years. In all, the team generated 1 million lines of code, 700,000 lines of code in Java, 300,000 lines of code in C++, plus random droppings of Prolog, JavaScript, and other languages. Just to be clear, I was not, nor am I now, a member of the Watson team. Rather, I'm just a storyteller brought in to help the Watson team document, extend, and grow the Watson architecture. This is therefore a work in progress, a work that will unfold over Watson's lifetime. How does an outsider approach 1 million lines of code? How do the insiders, for whom the code was the very oxygen they had been breathing for several years, articulate the essence of what they themselves have created? As an outsider, there is a process I follow that seems to work, and it's working with Watson. First step, immerse yourself in the domain. I'm a voracious reader and watcher of the world, so the essentials of most of the dark corners of computing are at least not unapproachable to me, if not to some degree a little familiar. The game of Jeopardy I grot, for instance, where you can easily find the dominant approaches to natural language understanding and question answering systems in the literature. Trek, the text retrieval conference, is a particularly fertile source for Watson's domain, as are the journals of the American Association of Artificial Intelligence. You can't conduct a meaningful archaeological dig if you don't know the land and the territory and the language. Even Indiana Jones never stepped into an adventure without understanding the local culture. While architecture transcends any given instance of a system, you have to know enough to even begin to ask the right questions. Second step, absorb all relevant development documents. Every system, even those built with the most lightweight of processes, will have some brain droppings worth studying. If you're really lucky and all the planets are aligned and you have good karma, you might find an honest-to-goodness architecture document. In Watson's case, IASM was given 100 or so documents, ranging from drafts of papers to PowerPoint decks to spreadsheets. There's a social reason for this request. Any good development team is going to be busy developing, so having them flood with you with documents requires little of their time, and looking at what they send and what they don't tells you a lot about what's going on in their minds, what's up for them. Given that collection, you can make some quick calibrations as to the team's architectural maturity. And in this case, you were wondering, I rate the Watson team very mature. And I'm not just saying that because we each have blue running through our veins. There's a corollary to this step. After absorbing these documents, you'll see obvious holes in understanding. If I lack the context, it's back to step one for me. If the lack is in the architectural brain droppings, it's back to questioning the development team. In preparing for the third step, if all has progressed well thus far, I'll ask the team to generate three things for me: a picture of the architecture as they see it, a picture of their social structure as they see it, and a list of their top design decisions. Then I'll interview the team, either as a group of or individually. In Watson's case, I had access to its software and hardware architects, and through a handful of hour-long calls with them, I was able to generate a more formal picture of the as-built architecture. Their hand-drawn pictures were quite illuminating, similar to the PowerPoint architectures that have been circulating, but different enough in some places to expose the soul of Watson. The fourth step involves interpreting that architecture. To do so, I created various UML models. Simultaneously, Watson's architects began writing a formal architecture document. We developed a comfortable duality where we'd share insights, observations, and models with one another several times a week. By the way, as I typically do, I used Philippe Krushin's 4+1 model view as a framework for all such architectural exercises. It works across every type of system I've studied over the years. It's simple, it's expressive, it's efficient. Thank you, Philippe. The fifth step is perhaps the most important one for me. Use the architecture description in anger. What I mean is that a paper document is little more than intellectual cotton candy, and you have to actually understand, refactor, and grow the associated system to validate it. If a third party can take that document and perform this step, it's even better, for the unforgiving fire of actual use will either destroy what you've done, and you deserve it, or burn off all the impurities and leave you with something that's actually useful. The final step, go to step one, with deep apologies to Edsger Dijkstra. Well, sort of a final step. By the time I take a second pass through this process, I always find a way to study the system from the bottom up, from the source code to the architecture. Doing this in the first step is a little mind-numbing. You use the sense of all the architectural forest you're in for the many trees that surround you. But by the time in your second or third pass of the process, two things will happen. First, you'll find holes in your and the team's understanding of the as-built system. With some detective work, you'll find the answers in the code. Second, you will by then have established theories and models of how the team perceives the system's architecture. And while you may trust their word, you will want to verify it against the reality of the running system. By the way, in the category Animal Crackers, the corresponding clue to my earlier dangling question is one bite at a time.